I'm Marcel Holtmann, and I'm going to have a quick 30 minutes. I just speak low, quieter than you can't hear me. A quick talk about what we have done with the wireless daemon and where we are right now and what has been happening over the last year. Who went to my talk yesterday, standard disclaimer aside, since I work for Intel, so we have all these nice disclaimers, etc. But then I have them out of the way. So before I continue with this one, I have to give a lot of extra credit because I'm not the only one working on this one. It's a whole team with me that actually does a lot of the works. So Dennis does most of the major patch handling. Andrew does a lot of the internal work when it comes to the really nasty parts of the wireless subsystem. Tim, Raoul, James are pretty heavily trying to get us support for all the other features that we need. And Matt has been working on the crypto stuff, and I will get back to this later. So, Wi-Fi is always funny, and I've been working on pretty much everything that doesn't have a cable, mostly Bluetooth, but also Wi-Fi 15.4 and all the other funny technologies. And the Wi-Fi side has been rubbing me the wrong way for at least the last 10 years. It never really felt right how we're doing it in Linux, and I never really liked it. So, a while back, we set out to do something different. And the reason why we set out to do something different is because it never felt as a subsystem. You can say the Wi-Fi has a subsystem in the Linux kernel, 802.11 subsystem, they're doing all the work, they have driver abstractions, all great from there. But once you actually try to start using this one, you basically get told, use wp-supplicant, and that's the only way to do this. And the problem is, it does a good job for certain things, but it never does the complete job. So if you look at this one, for every other subsystem we, over the past 10 years, we actually have built a subsystem, a nice user space, and then we could actually have a connection manager on top of this one using this one. So the logic of what is technology specific has been kept inside the technology specific daemon, besides Bluesy, Ofono, etc. And it worked really well. We have a gap for 15.4, but that's just a time we're going to fix. That's a gap that we fix pretty soon as well. But when it comes to Wi-Fi, we could never do it this way. We could never say, what if we simply can please manage my network? And then just tell me when you're connected, and please remember my networks so I actually can reconnect this. And always, and it was really complicated. It does half the job. You have to do extra glue on top of this one. It becomes complicated. It swallows state. So sometimes you actually don't know what's going on, which is really, really bad. So we had to build this whole Wi-Fi support into the connection manager. Network manager had to do the same thing, and everybody else, including Android, Chrome OS, wherever you're going to look, as soon as you use Wi-Fi on Linux, they're using wsupplicant, and they build a lot of stuff around it to actually make it usable and actually have to do it the right thing. So things move up into a layer they're not supposed to be. And what we were really after is we want this layout. We want a connection manager on top of this one, and then we actually want separate technology daemons that actually does the whole job for you. And this is what we came up with, the iNet Wireless daemon, so IWD, keeping it pretty short and don't have a complicated name. And this is what I'm going to give you a quick back what we have done so far and also what's coming next. So every time I'm doing this one, it's like, why a new daemon? Because I get always told, don't do this. Don't rewrite things. I'm personally a believer doing a second project that gives you competition is a good thing because it brings both projects forward. Initially, we actually didn't want to start from scratch because it was too much work. And we said, okay, let's fix wsupplicant. I don't really care. We can just easily fix this. Guess what? We couldn't, because they wouldn't accept it upstream. Some of the ideas were outright rejected. Some of the things were like, oh, you have to do X, Y, Z additionally. And then you say, oh, like, how are you going to do this? Or you can't do this in the current code base. You have to do tons of other restructuring. So it's really complicated. And the main key points were that really struck us were persistency. Wsupplicant doesn't remember a damn thing. You restart, you kill the daemon, you reboot, you disconnect from your network. All the information, what you have done before, are gone. It lives in the moment, so it means you never know what happened. And if you want to keep any kind of state tracking, so this is my network for home, this is my network for work, at this time I'm connected to that network at work because it's probably between 9 and 3 or 4, and I'm going to drive back home, don't bother finding the work network. It's most likely not there. And these things you have to do by yourself. Nobody's doing them for you, so you have to do things over and over again. And this went in complete contrast to how we've done this in Bluesy and Ofono, because it remembers everything. It remembers all pairings, it remembers all access points, and so on and so forth. The worst part then when you say, look, we can live with this one, is that all the management of 802.11, some of the key details, you have to redo inside your connection over again. So parsing the information elements that you get for the security information, every single connection parses them again. So it's not, you don't get told this is 802.11 pre-shared keys. No, you get a bunch of information elements and you have to figure out, oh, what does it mean? Is this really ASN, personal, is this enterprise, and so on and so forth. So that all trickles all up the stack for no apparent reason, because in the end, you don't really care. Tell me what you need from me. Do you need a pre-shared key? You need a certificate? What do you need? I will give it to you. In theory, these should be all have been hidden, but they are not. And this really, you see this in design, it's really complicated and it trickles through. And if you look at other things like, for example, Chrome OS, once you actually look at under the hood, you see how far they're going to take this up. Some tasks go up into the Chrome browser because they only figured out we can only answer this in the UI because we have nothing in between that actually will do the abstraction for us. One thing that rubbed me really badly is that WSIPKit runs on literally everything. So the amount of abstractions they have in there is unbelievable. And I have a diagram that will show you a little bit of it, but that's only a little bit. But that you fundamentally still carry around the legacy stuff for wireless extensions 10 years after we deprecated it is quite amazing. And they keep still updating it. One other thing that is really not that critical, but for us it was a really key point that we couldn't live with, is that it actually uses blocking operations. So it sends a command to the kernel and waits for the response. The kernel interface is completely asynchronous, so something can happen in between, you can get an event. It will actually swallow that event and only give it to you later, which means you're missing out on doing things the right way or doing things fast. And this is really something we actually didn't want to do. So I compare WSIPKit pretty much to this one. It can do everything. Whatever kind of spec you're going to find, it has support for specs that are in draft form and will coming out only years later. You have code for the in there. You can toy with it. You can play with it. But if you want to actually build this into a product, you're kind of lost. And if you break this a little bit down, you get to something. This is still a simplified view, but this is what it actually looks like if you actually do WSIPKit and use it. It's, you have the hardware, you have the kernel side with softmac and a fullmac. That's also great. You have the configuration interface and you have Netlink or the wireless extension to this one. Okay, we can live with the dual one. If you're running on macOS, you have to do a different version. If you're running on Atos, you have a different one. If you want to do this on Windows, you have a different one and the list goes on. And then you have finally of the supplicant, but then it exposes like four interfaces that I actually have found lately. It has a control interface, which the developer uses, and the developer never cares about any of the other interfaces, so if they break, he doesn't care. You have an old dbus interface that nobody wants to deprecate because someone might be using it. You have a new one that isn't complete. We actually would have to build a third one to fix the issues of the second one. And then you still have the binder for Android integration, and there are probably even more that I keep forgetting. So our biggest problem was really that we had to actually build another library on top of this one to actually get the state guessing into a single place and have a current view on what this thing is doing before we try to actually push the states even higher. As I said, Chrome OS pushes some of the states up into the UI. Network Manager goes really high, and we had to actually build something called gsupplicant that allows us to confine all the craziness that we got from the API in this level. We are still guessing in a lot of cases. If you use this setup, we're still guessing in a lot of cases if the state changes from connected to roaming or from roaming to disconnected or if you lost the authentication in between. We got pretty good at guessing, but it's still guessing a lot of cases. Oh, and of course, it carries around its own TLS implementation. You can use GNU TLS, Open TLS, and all the variations of this one. So whatever you wanted. If you think that's bad, it actually gets worse because everybody forks it. I mean, every silicon manufacturer has their own version of WSIPKit because they actually make it hardware dependent at that point, which makes it even worse. So, really not maintainable. And if you think what is currently running in Android is then running on a Linux desktop, that's probably not the case. And even if you run it on a Linux desktop, it might not be the same, similar to the Android version, because an Android phone from Samsung will have a different WSIPKit than an Android phone from Sony, etc. So it's really, really bad. And it's something that we couldn't live with. And it's, look, if you want to improve this, we just have to ignore this. It's not maintainable. It's not fixable. We can't do anything about this. So how hard can it actually be to start from scratch? We actually had a good, really good idea what we were getting into when we started, but we were still a little bit blindsided with some of the key pieces where things got a little bit more complicated or where we assumed the Linux kernel was doing the right thing. It wasn't always so. There were little things that were unexpected. But generally, we had a good idea going in there. And if you take the diagram that I had before, we actually set out to do this really, really simple. We don't want to do wireless extensions. They're dead. We don't need them. They're actually also not capable of the things you want to do. We figure out, we focus on the config 802.11. We have to put an embedded library on underneath it since we needed basic functionality. We didn't want to use glib anymore. And we also knew that we needed a little bit extra features like generic netlink support and so on and so forth. And then we want our daemon. And then we want a dbus interface. and then we're going to start conman on top of it. No guessing, nothing, looking absolutely identical like what we did with Bluesy and Ofono. So refocusing on Linux, this was really the part. Forget everything else. We don't want to support Windows. We don't want to support macOS. We don't support an RTOS. We want to focus this or get this up on Linux and use what Linux offers us. The interesting part is that some of the interfaces, wsupplicant was the only user, and it actually was using it incorrectly, and nobody realized it was using it incorrectly and had some fixes in there. So that's kind of bad. If you only have one client for a kernel interface, that's never really a good idea. Examples were hot plug support. They completely forgot about hot plug support. They actually want to put a plug, put a new card in there, have a new Wi-Fi device, and then say, oh, the kernel tells you here's the new Wi-Fi interface. They didn't. And I have no idea how hot plug actually works since you couldn't make this work. But it turned out wsupplicant actually listened to the network interface coming up. And once the network interface came up, they said, oh, yeah, there might be a new card. So let's look if we find a new card. So then ask the kernel to dump the card. And so just telling, like, why can't it just tell us that there's a new card? These kind of things. But because of legacy with wireless extensions, that was never the case. There was always a wireless interface bound to a network interface, but that doesn't really exist anymore with more modern wireless technology. So fixing this one was one of the obvious things. And some features didn't work as expected, some features needed to be added, and we still have a bunch more. But the majority of them to actually make this work now, we actually got all upstream a while ago, but I think about 8 or 9 months ago. So this is pretty nice. If you get a recent kernel, all this will work fine. The Netlink library was another pain point, since there's still, I think, probably 6 or 7 Netlink libraries out there. Libnl, the most prominent one. It's touted as being fully asynchronous and easy and great. It isn't. It's actually pretty horrible, because it's actually blocking when you do the generic Netlink discovery. So it actually sits down and waits until you discover the families. There's no guarantee that the kernel returns them quickly. Also, the generic Netlink families are dynamic, so if you unload a kernel module, they might go away and get a different ID. It is incapable of handling this one at all. So we needed a new Netlink library, and there's a couple of other ones, and the libnl actually is extremely bad in some cases because it uses a lot of memory, because it pre-allocates a 4K buffer in some cases. It's like, look, we need like 80 bytes of this message, and you are allocating 4K, that's kind of wasteful. So we said, okay, we need something new for this one as well. We already had the embedded Linux library worked out as more as a pet project to turn the other projects away from glib. But IWD was the starting point and actually drive this further. So we had to put in standard stuff, main loop handling, signals, ring buffers, hardware database integration, hash tables, all these fancy stuff that you need no matter what you want to do. But we also put Netlink support in there. And once you actually redo the Netlink support, not using libnl, it actually becomes super easy and super small. Same as for the generic Netlink, and you can actually discover and rediscover families and will tell you, actually, your family went away because you unloaded the kernel module as an on enforce. So you have the right ID tracking. It works in that bus. In that case, it works similar to dbus, where you actually have services coming and going at the time you want, except that's a kernel service at this point. We said we don't want to use libdbus. Maybe some people can relate. It's not an easy interface to use. It's one of the things, how hard can it be to write a dbus client? Pretty hard, actually, since that protocol makes you want to jump off a bridge at some point. I don't know, not many people actually have rewritten that from scratch, but some people have. You have my sympathies, trust me. Especially you want to do the zero copy. If you want to do the zero copy and somebody reaches the case, it's like, who has designed this protocol? Why can't I do zero copy over that array? It drives you mad. I think we managed, sort of, but it has native dbus support in the rest, so don't really have to rely on anything else, which decreases our dependencies quite a lot. We did logging while the journal and internal debugging and something like dynamic debug, etc., and so forth. Source code is on kernel.org since a long time. We have done releases on this one, so this is all good. We are pretty happy with this one. So with this one all figured out and all done, we actually were able to do wireless connections really quickly. You don't believe, I think it was a 2 or 3 days, and we had the first wireless connections up, including card discovery, creating the interface, setting it up, scanning, grouping the interfaces. And that was really, really quickly you got it there. You could actually, if you have an open network, you could connect to it, run DHCP, and you said, wow, this is great. But then the fun part came, is like, so how are we going to do the rest of it? Because we actually have to tell, we have to handle the keys inside the kernel, we have to figure out everything else, we also do the rest of it. And we tried, and we actually failed in some cases, because the API documentation hinted in a different direction. So, and I was like, look at wsupplicant, what it's doing. That makes no sense. And I was like, how do we figure out what actually is supposed to be done? What's actually okay? So we actually had to make one step back and say, look, we need to know what's actually happening between the kernel and the user space. We actually want to trace the netlink commands that are going into the kernel, what they're doing, what the kernel response to is, and so on and so forth, without having to enter 300 printfs or printfs into wsupplicant and retrying this one. So luckily for us at that point, we had the netlink monitor driver available. And so you could hook into any kind of netlink message. It sounds really easy, but it was rather complicated because it gives you pretty much everything. So you get route netlink, you get netlink, you get NL211, you get every netlink messages if you're unlucky. So you need to play a couple with filters. But at the end of the day, we actually figured this out. And even without any progress, that we actually got a monitoring tool to figure out what's actually going on between the daemon and user space and the kernel was already a great achievement. We added also EPL support for this one, so we can actually debug what the four-way handshake is doing, which really helped us to figure out, okay, this is going right, it's going wrong. And we're using this one for a lot of development where you actually have an access point that behaves badly or a client behaves badly, and then we can figure out what's going on. It's pretty simple. It looks like the Bluetooth monitoring tool, which we copied some code from it. This is an example where you just scan for this one. So the supplicant says, I want to scan. It says, I want to trigger the scan. It gives you the frequencies and the SSID it looks for. It will tell you, okay, that actually worked. And then it will go, the scan completed, and now you can go start collecting the results. The interesting part is you also get the notification even if you don't the active daemon that triggers it, because you get a notification also that someone else triggered the scanning for you. So even if someone just types in a command line, IW scan, you can actually figure the rest out and actually act accordingly instead of trying, oh, something else is scanning now, don't try this again, kind of thing. So with this one in the box, we could also debug how some of the keys have been entered, what's happening in the right order, and so on and so forth. Guess what? In a lot of cases, wsupplicant still does this wrongly because it has no idea of some of these stations that are active or not active anymore, and it tries to delete keys that never have been there in the first place. It's kind of funny to watch in these things. Anyway, we needed to actually get pre-shared keys at least working, so four-way handshake was a mandatory thing. Dealing with an Ethernet port, if your main interface to the kernel is Netlink 811, is a little bit weird. It's something we're actually trying to fix really soon. The Ethernet packets are handed over Netlink, so you don't have these race conditions between the Ethernet scheduling and the Netlink scheduling. We need to synchronize these ones. As I said, this is the majority that actually might go away. Right now, we still have to do this. So we have to cache some packets and then make the decision later. It's a bit nasty. Encryption keys have to go in Netlink 211, but you have to actually track some of them and to make sure this all works out, but it's all good. The key refresh goes also via user space, a little bit annoying, but there's some offload code. It sometimes works, it other times doesn't, so I think we have to go back and fix some of the kernel drivers that claim they support key offloading or key refresh offloading, and in reality they don't. So we have to figure this out. And you have to build proper station management. But actually, it's not that big. So once you have this all done, you can really easily connect to a pre-shared key network, what the most people use at home. So it's really, really quickly. We had to make a small detour since we realized the target market for the embedded world, where you want to actually push IWD because it's so tiny. They all want enterprise security. You have the small embedded device somewhere and they want to put certificate in there, and that's where they want to connect. Initially, we didn't want to do this that early, but we realized, okay, we probably have to. So enterprise Wi-Fi, X509 certificates, and TLS, and it's like, oh my God, so what do we have to do now? Do we have to get back to actually drag new TLS and open SSL in there? My experience with either of these is not good. New TLS is definitely better than OpenSSL from API point of view and some things, but it still has the fundamental problems. It consumes a lot of memory, and it also has blocking operations for the TLS handshake. That really didn't let us the right path and say, look, we don't want to use any of these ones. We actually want a non-blocking access to the TLS handshake as well. So that means we also need a full EAP engine. And at the end of the day, we ended up with, like, look, we need to look somewhere else. And we actually started looking into the kernel crypto. So whatever we have to do for the crypto, we don't want to actually use an external crypto library, but we also don't want to write it by ourselves. So AF-ALK and the get random system calls gets you pretty much every single hash on the planet, every single crypto cipher, symmetric cipher, and that way is we got this pretty well sorted out. Small minor detail was that Wi-Fi has a few weird key derivation functions that drive you crazy as well because they decided not to use something standard. They had to make up the, they are actually standard, but they have to make the input they get is really from complicated four-way handshakes where you have the MAC address in there and some nonces and so on and so forth. So if they would just use something standard, it would be a lot easier. is special since the kernel got a crypto key duration function inside the crypto subsystem. You could just hand it the input and it would give you the rest of it. And you could chain them easily together. So it would have been easy. But for the personal Wi-Fi, we got this really figured out, and it just calls into the kernel. Since the crypto by itself is really small, the performance impact of doing the system calls doesn't really hit you at all. They could offload this via hardware, but I don't think any hardware will be more faster than just doing this in software if you only have one or two AES operations, for example. Good thing is we didn't have to do this, implement them in user space, and we don't have to use the Nexmem crypto library. For the enterprise one, it got a lot more trickier since we had no idea what to do with X509 certificates. Luckily, the kernel does. So because of secure boot, the kernel actually knows how to handle X509 certificates. The kernel knows how to actually pass them, chain them together, verify them, and so on and so forth. We just really needed to actually extend this so you can actually do certain operations that the kernel was only doing internally, but never exposed to user space. So it's all done via the key control system call, and it allows you to actually load certificates, chain them together, put them in key rings, so you can actually build a CA that the kernel holds for you and use that as a CA for your user space. There are a few functions missing. We have them in external patches, and Matt maintains a tree that actually has this all built together because it comes from three different maintainers. And hopefully in the next couple of kernel releases, we get these ones upstream so they're actually available. But then pretty much you can build a whole CA in user space, but let the kernel manage it, and you can hand it over to separate processes as well. So because the keyring subsystem has a permission control that is really fine-grained, you can even have one thread having a different keyring access than other ones. So it's pretty nice, works out pretty well. It doesn't have container support, but I think people are even working on this one. With this in place, we actually had to deviate a little bit from our original design, but really not much. It's pretty much, we actually use additional functionality with AFALC and key control that the kernel offers anyway and is available on most platforms. And with this one, we have the crypto figured out. Don't need GNU TLS, don't need OpenSSL or anything alike. We don't even need like something like libcrypto for basic cryptography because the kernel does this all for us. So where did this all end up in? Most of these we just stuffed into L and say, look, if you want to use an AES cipher, if you want to use a hash, there's a function L for it. There's a few functions we had to do in user space because they actually are more like file format things. So we have base64 encoding, decoding, PM format for the certificates. And then we actually added the RSA key and keyring support there as well, so it's available. But right now, as of now, you need a reason, you need a MATS kernel to actually pull this all together. The TLS record protocol, as of now, is actually implemented inside the L library, but hopefully with the TLS support inside the kernel, we get this fixed as well. So that's all good. Enterprise and advanced Wi-Fi, we actually have this now, so the push button support or the WPS is fully supported and works amazingly quick. TLS, TTLS, SIM, even SIM support, where you actually integrated this, or Phonos, you can use a SIM card for authentication. All there works all well. So all these things that are really, really complicated have been taken out of the equation. That's all good, but one of the things we had, we now had a functional daemon, but we don't have actually a tool to control it. And this is, again, a chicken and egg problem where you have a people, where you give them a daemon, but nobody knows how to use it. So our IW control client is complete as well. And you can actually use this with the Python tools together and really use it for actually testing and so on and so forth. The interesting part to note here with the wsupplicant, you really can only have one user. So whatever you put on top of this one has to encapsulate it because any concurrency will completely fail because you stumble on top of each other. So it had to, everything had to go through comments. You had no chance of just looking what's the Wi-Fi status or get the RSSI updates or anything else. With IW, you can actually do this now because we actually separate this out. And you can have conman talking to it. You can open IW control to see what network you're connected to. You can have a separate agent for your passphrases. You can even have an RSSI monitoring just connected directly to say, look, I only care what the current RSSI status is and what my network name is because I want to display this in a status bar. So really nice. I only had a few minutes left, so I can try to actually do a demo really quickly to see if this works. So you get an idea on what we have. Oops, so where we go here? Oh, sorry, you don't see anything. So just for fun, it. So the monitoring is kind of interesting, then you see what's going on. You're not watching that at the same time on YouTube? How much? Bigger? All right, let's try this one as well. The funny part is you see that route netlink gets even executed when you actually just type a simple command. So the C library executes the quest for netlink interface as well, which is funny to see. So if you just start the daemon, you get all the, it's fully debug mode on right now. You get the information, it sets the regulatory information, but currently no card is attached to it. So if I'm actually plugging one in, then you see it actually goes on, finds it, and it starts already scanning for it and tries to find the networks. Okay, so the API, interestingly, is really, really simple on IWD. We don't have to do much since it keeps all the states. We really only need to give you a way to discover your devices. You see, it found the wireless interface, and we can just scan on it. It has tap completion, so that's kind of neat. As I showed the example before, it was going to trigger the skin, and it will eventually succeed. Accidentally, I picked a card with 5 gigahertz support, so it will take a little bit longer. But you see what's going on, and then you can just tell, okay, please tell me actually what networks are here. And you see we have a couple of networks here, not that many. The fun part actually, what I like most is that this actually works. I can do the push button support, so I could really literally just go do this. Press on an access point, and then we'll start out finding it, and it will succeed. So you'll have oh, of course. When I demo this one, it doesn't work. Well, maybe try this one more time. So generally, this works really quick. You see the commands going on. You can actually, okay, awesome. Let's try if this actually works manually. The only thing we haven't really done yet is, the agent hasn't been integrated into the control utility. So this is a little bit of a problem that we're fixing really, really soon. And you see it obviously asks you for the passphrase. You type it in. And if you're lucky, then it flipped to connected. So it's as fast as I can't even type this in the command line client. It's already done connecting to it one. So I'm out of time, so but with this one, oops. Do you have any quick questions before they kick me out of stage? Please go ahead.
Has the ELL library found any other users yet?
So yeah, that's a good question. So we actually have this with some of the multipass TCP support. We're actually doing this one. There are some other projects in the IT space using it. We actually built a version that you can integrate into a Phono. So we can run this at the same time around the glib main loop. So we can actually use both. And we will slowly migrate away from them really quickly in the next couple of months.
Do you aim for desktop support as well?
Okay, so we actually, I'm skipping these now. So what we really want after is, there's a few things we're actually really after. So we currently have conman support. Last time I said we're not going to do network manager support. That's changed. We actually are working on the network manager support. You will see this really quickly. We have a working prototype where we use this in Chrome OS. So we're taking a few things out there. There's a lot of work to do there. It's really just a prototype. We actually want to drive this even further and see what we can do this one. I don't think it's going to be anywhere in Android, but any other distribution could potentially have it really quickly, either if they use Network Manager or if they use a Phono, or for Chrome OS, we actually will make a dedicated version. So yes, we hope this will be done really quickly. We have some fun stuff on the works. We're actually going to take the eApp engine out and build this for Ethernet-based authentication. So that will happen soon, and we will create a separate daemon so you can actually connect to your corporate network by just plugging in the cable as well. But we really need to take this out because we don't want to use wsupplican for any of the cable-based authentication. As I said before, the agent support will be built into the client as well. And there's some other advanced features when it comes to roaming, fast transition, etc. that we've got to all build them in. But that's happening pretty quickly. Oh, by the way, before I leave, it's not vulnerable against crack. That has been all fixed. We not install a zero key. We are not doing this one and never have to. We actually don't even reply to the message 3 replays that are happening because we just decided to ignore them because they really only happen if you're super paranoid and have an absolutely horrible link. If you have a horrible link, a lot more other things go wrong first before you actually see a replay message. Anyway, with that, thank you very much. Find me offline if you have any further questions. Thanks.